Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
Nothing about the way Meghan Markle has joined the royal family has been straightforward. The past 2 years have been a whirlwind for the Duchess of Sussex and her husband Harry, with the usual paparazzi blitzes and tabloid headlines and flashing lights, all the stuff that goes along with marrying a prince and giving birth to a royal baby. But it hasn't been easy either. And this week, even people like me, for instance, who don't give a damn about the royals, usually, got a notable glimpse into the toll that can take.
On top of just trying to be a new mom or trying to be a newlywed, it's, I guess, and also thank you for asking, because not many people have asked if I'm okay, but it's a very real thing to be going through behind the scenes.
Meghan's husband, for his part, knew exactly who to blame for the way his wife was feeling, and he wasn't holding back either.
Prince Harry spelling out the couple's hurt and anger at the tabloid media in a statement as hard-hitting as it was emotional. I cannot begin to describe how painful it has been, Prince Harry writes, accusing the tabloid media of waging a ruthless campaign that has escalated over the past year, throughout her pregnancy, and while raising our newborn son.
For a celebrity, interviews like the one Meghan gave are revealing, but not uncommon. Celebrities bare their souls all the time. It's part of the gig. But a royal? A duchess? Letting the world into her heart and mind when everything is not okay? That's different. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Patricia Treble of WriteRoyalty.com is the royal contributor for Maclean's. Hi, Patricia.
Hello, Jordan.
Can you tell me in detail, for people that maybe haven't seen it and just heard the little clip that we played in our intro, about the moment earlier this week that kind of made the world realize that something different was going on with Meghan Markle?
Yeah, Meghan and Harry. It was a documentary that aired, and it was about their trip to Southern Africa that had happened last month. And this was an official visit. It was on behalf of the British government. And a friend of theirs who was an ITV news anchor was there filming a documentary, behind-the-scenes documentary. And the clip started coming out on social media promoting this. It was airing in Britain first, and then it aired on ABC in the United States. And the clips were gobsmacking, I've got to say, because you've got Harry talking about that he's not over the grief of his mother. And there was this moment when he's in the middle of the African wilderness. It's at night. They're at a campsite. And he's talking about the fact that he can't get over how the paparazzi treated her, how the media treated her. And he has this quote. He says that every time he hears a camera, he hears a click, he thinks about that the worst moments of his mother, what his mother went through. And at that point, my heart was breaking for him, because you could see the pain on his face. You could feel the pain. And it's no secret for those of us in the media that he genuinely hates the media. I mean, he loathes the fact that the media are simply part of his life. He does as little as possible. He makes it as hard as possible. And to hear him talk about that, it was just heartbreaking. You have to be sympathetic. And then came out these moments when Meghan started talking. And again, she's talking about it, and there's this close-up of her face, and you can see she looks as though she's about to cry. And she's talking about how, you know, as a mother, she's been going through so much. And because in the past, like, 2 years since her engagement, she's gone through every major stressor you can have in your life. She's gotten engaged. She's gotten to a different country. She's gotten married. She's had a baby. She's, you know, got a new life, got a new job. They've moved house. They broke, you know, gone apart from, you know, the brother who he was always fabulously close with, William. I mean, every major stressor. Mm. And you can see her, and she's talking about how, you know, as a woman trying to do this and having a baby, like, you know, ah. Archie is only 5 months old. She's still breastfeeding. She's on this huge royal tour. And she talks about how when the interviewer asks her, you know, how are you doing? And she says, people haven't asked me that question. They haven't asked me how I'm feeling, how, you know, if I'm feeling okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that moment I kind of went, whoa, this was going to be unlike any other documentary we'd ever seen of the royal family. And so when it aired, and this is kind of the fortunate thing, is that in a way, their personal revelations, by being so open, it in a way overshadowed the documentary itself, which was talking about their tour of Southern Africa, which is very much about their causes. And it was, they were meeting with, you know, talking about gender issues, talking about violence against women, talking about wildlife conservation, and Harry retracing the steps of his mother 22 years ago, walking through what, when she walked through a minefield, remember she was wearing all the mine clearance mm-hmm. gear. And 22 years later, that place is now part of a bustling town. It's been brought back to life. And so it was always this incredibly emotional tour. But in many ways, what people are going to remember, are they're going to remember those moments, those incredibly emotional, raw moments of Harry and Meghan.
What is different about those moments that would make someone like myself and like our producer, Claire, neither of us whom are real royal watchers or who follow the family and the news, take notice? Because we did. We were both talking about those clips after we saw them on social media, and they really, like, they resonated. And what does that represent about what this couple is to the royal family?
Well,
it feels different.
Oh, completely different. I mean, so you have to take a step back, and you have to think of the royals separately from celebrities, okay? So most of us are used to celebrity culture. We're used to, you know, actresses or whoever, you know, going on television, being emotional about, you know, something very personal to them, and then retreating, you know, behind the studios, behind all that kind of security. Whereas for royals, because they're in front of the public eye for so long, for decades, you know, they don't, you know, come on with a splash and fade after 5 or 10 years. They're there for decades upon decades. It's generation after generation. That what, for most royals, and royalty around the world, you've learned, they'll do interviews. You know, the European royals are usually out in front of the cameras. They do a lot more media probably than even the British royals. But they keep a lot of those personal inner feelings, that turmoil, to themselves, because they know that once you let that out into the public, then the next thing, they want to know about that. Well, how are you feeling about this? Well, how do you feel about this? And how do you feel about this? You've opened a door that you cannot close. I mean, there's a reason why the Queen every year retreats to her private royal estates in the countryside in England and up in Scotland. And she just retreats. You'll see her occasionally, but she just retreats because she's getting away from everything, because she's constantly on. Everyone's looking at her. There's a great saying that for ordinary people, the two constants in your life are death and taxes. If you're royals, it's death, taxes, and the media. And so what was so different about Harry and Meghan was that they were letting it all out. And then they have really talked about it. I mean, I think part of it is that they wanted to circumvent, in many ways, the filter of the media. And by doing this, they could. They got it immediately to the people. You can see their pain. But the question that I've got is that's the tactic, but what's the strategy? What do they want from this? Because by revealing themselves, the most vulnerable parts of themselves, and it's clear they are struggling right now, what do they want? Because you have to say, well, yes, I know you're personally struggling, but you also live in a multi-million dollar house. You know, you have huge amounts of government-paid security. You have huge amounts of privilege right. paid for
and
by the royal
struggles,
family.
But
and
everybody else struggles. Would trade places with you.
You know, I'm going to be honest, not me. Because I think I've seen it. And I think
I might.
Fair enough. But I think there's a way to handle this. And some of the reaction to it has been, you know, when you look at the media reaction, there's been a separation between kind of how it's been perceived throughout a lot of North America, which has been the focus on them and on the struggles, you know, very positive, and in Britain.
How has it been perceived in Britain? Because I haven't seen much of that
it's
at all.
It's been a very mixed bag. I mean, a lot like me, I mean, you know, when they're talking about the misconceptions about their lives, they're talking about the misconception of the struggles, you mean you can't help but feel sympathy for them. I mean, it is just overwhelming. Yet at the same time, there has been criticism, and some of it has been simply the wording. When Meghan went on and was talking about, there was this particular clip when she talked about how she tried to adopt a stiff upper lip, but she just found it too emotionally damaging. That's a direct attack of the royal family, because the royal family is the epitome of the British stiff upper lip. They
right.
don't show emotions in public very often. I mean, the younger generation do. William and Kate, you know, Sophie, some of the younger ones absolutely do. But the older generation, the Queen, Charles, they don't. And then when she was talking about people hadn't been asking her how she was feeling, that was perceived as a direct attack to the royal family, because it's not like, you know, ordinary people could say, hey, how are you doing, Meghan? And what's interesting is that there has been a reaction. And so a few days later, out comes the press saying the Queen, Charles, the royal family have actually gone out of their way to help her and to ask her for, you know, what does she need?
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
How much of this openness is from Harry and Meghan specifically and is part of the way they want to take the royal family, and how much of it is kind of a function of the new generation of royals in general? Because as you mentioned, you know, others have been more open, maybe not quite this open, but how much of it is them specifically and what are they changing about royalty versus just what's changing? We're almost in 2020.
Yeah, it's a good point. When you look at the Queen and, you know, you talk about it, she's formal. She's from a very formal generation. I mean,
right.
She was born in 1926, right? You know, and when you look at, you know, Charles and Camilla, I mean, you know, they're in their 70s. And I think it is a generational thing. And you see it. It's not just Harry and Meghan. And there was kind of this, and I think this brings it back as to who's talking about whom, is that when you talk about, you know, William and Kate, I mean, there is a bit more formality because they know what's coming. They're going to be King and Queen. And yet you see them, they're hugging kids, they're getting into, you know, they're right into the mix. They're willing to do all sorts of stuff. And so how much of it is just Harry and Meghan? I don't know. Certainly they have been far more open with their feelings and stuff like that. The PDA, Public Displays of Affection, far more than the rest of the royals. But I do think it is a generational thing. And people, I think, because Harry and Meghan are so super hot right now, they are white hot. I mean, everything they do garners attention. People tend to forget to put them in context of the other royals within Europe. And when you look at the other royals of that age, of that, the rank, stuff like that, they're all doing variations on a theme, you know, doing documentaries, being very open, things like that. I think Harry and Meghan have probably taken it a little bit further in this particular documentary. But everyone is doing that. Even William and his father, Charles, are in a documentary that's actually airing this last week in Britain, talking about taking over the Duchy of Cornwall, which is a very ancient estate that always the heir of the throne has. And they, you know, it's this revealing, it's this behind the scenes sort of thing. I mean, it happens all the time. I think when you're in North America, you only get part of the story, as opposed to when you're in Britain, where you kind of get the full breadth of what the royal family does. You see them on daily engagements. You see them doing all the bread and butter work of the royal family, right, which you don't get in North America.
How much of the difference in terms of how Meghan is covered in the UK versus in the US is the fact that she's the first racialized member of the royal family and she's treated differently by the press there?
So here's the thing to think about when you're talking about the press, just in general, is that, and I think everyone's encountering this, is that there's a separation between the online and the social media versus, like, when you've got all the major news organizations in Britain have what they call royal correspondents. I mean, they actually follow the royal family. This is their job.
Yeah.
Whereas what you get in is you get in now and every little story, and it'll often be a royal correspondent who'll break it. And then everyone else has their spin, and it appears in the online things, and then it appears, and then they take it, and somebody else takes it, and it spins and spins and spins and spins and spins. And I think there has been a lot of attention because, yes, she is, you know, the first woman who, you know, black mother, white father. I mean, and she's talked about it when she was in South Africa. She was talking about the fact she was so proud she was there as a black woman. I mean, it was wonderful seeing that.
It is
that.
Neat.
It is very cool. I mean, you don't, and I guess the question is, a lot of people automatically say, oh, the criticism is because she's, you know, half black. I don't know that the criticism would have been there for a lot of the stuff anyways. I mean, when you're talking about them taking, you know, 4 private jets within a few weeks, while also at the same time talking about environmental causes and how we must all retrench, I think there would have been criticism regardless. Mm-hmm. But what I will say is that the social media, the attacks on her race, have been astounding. And I've written about it. It is like being dropped into a sea of vitriol and acid. It is the social media, Twitter, Instagram, everything. I mean, it is just horrendous. And I think it's also a part of the fact that we are a generation increasingly online where anonymity, you can just do these attacks. And I'm thinking, you know, why are you attacking her race because you didn't like her dress? Like, what? Like, huh? I mean, it's for a lot of people, I think it's baffling. And that kind of splashes over everything. And it's this overlying concern. And I think that it is that. And I think that's part of the reason why Harry is so protective of her, because it isn't just the media, but it's also the social media. And in a way that none of the other royals had that when they were being introduced to the royal family. And now you see, I mean, after this documentary, they announced that they're going to be taking 6 weeks off, like just a complete break. They're going to go to the United States, to L.A. Her mom's there. They're going to spend some time, American Thanksgiving there. Then they're going to come back. And I kind of think it's like just a rebalancing mm-hmm. of everything, because you're trying to tamp things down. And at the same time, I think that's good. But I also wonder what life is going to be like in L.A., because in L.A., the paparazzi, there are no rules. In Britain, there is a rule. You don't see pictures of Meghan with Archie in the papers. You don't see that because there is this unwritten agreement that you're not going to do that. So,
that does not exist in LA.
And that does not exist in LA. So I'm going to be interested to see that. And I think it'll give them time to think, you know, and I think about what they want to do and think about how they want to approach royal life. And I guess the question is, do they want to be royals? I mean, do they want to stay?
Do they get a choice in that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. He's far enough down the line. He's going to keep falling down the line. You absolutely get a choice. I mean, William has no choice. It is his life. And he's accepted that. Whereas for Harry, he does. Yeah, he absolutely does have a choice. But it is a double-edged sword. Because if he were to... The thing about the royal family is that they're not celebrities. You're there to support the monarchy. You're there to support the monarch.
Right,
you're there...
Job.
It is a commitment to that. So when they do royal tours, as I said, the Africa tour, you're there on behalf of the British government. You're not just doing what you want to do. And if you don't want that, then you don't get the police protections. You don't get the palaces, you know. And they raise an enormous amount of money for their charities by hosting events in palaces, by mm-hmm. doing all that. The gilded splendor rubs off on everyone else, right? And
sure.
If they don't have that, what do they have? They're building up their own Sussex royal brand. But how does that fit within the ethos that the royal family is to support the monarch? Can you be independent and still support the monarch?
Were these moments that resonated beyond the sort of insular royal world, were they a sea change in that we'll now see more of them from other royals? Will this make... And this is my last question, I guess, because I want to get a sense of whether this was a unique thing that happened to them because they were caught in the moment and decided to reveal themselves. Or is this the first we'll see of this new generation of royals opening up even more to the point where you let things right in your life the way celebrities cry on the couch with Ellen?
I think this is going to be a moment people are going to remember. How much is going to change, I don't know. William, Kate, Harry, and Meghan have always, they have in recent years, they've been talking about mental health issues. It's incredibly important to all of them. And William and Harry in particular have talked about their struggles.
And this seemed like walking the walk.
Well, this is a huge jump beyond that. I mean, this is a huge jump beyond that. I mean, and I don't know, because it's one thing to talk about mental health issues and to give your own self as an example. It's another thing to let it all hang out as a royal. What do you do in 10 years? I mean, because people are going to want more, and then they're going to want more. People, we know ourselves, right? We are addictive personalities, all of us. Mm-hmm. We want more and more and more and more and more. And I don't know.
Wait till Archie gets a TikTok account.
Well, and I think part of it is there is a difference in letting it all hang out as a celebrity versus letting it all hang out as a royal. And I'm wondering who their advisors are. I mean, there's been talk in the press, certainly, about the fact that they're getting a lot of the advisors are from Meghan's old, from her days as a working actress. And these are people who are used to a life, a celebrity life, where you have power over photos. You have photo approval. You control the editorial content. If they don't like what this reporter might say, well, then they'll deny them access. That doesn't work with the royals. I mean, they can't control what's being written about royals. So, for instance, when Harry was in this documentary and he talked quite openly about the fact that he and William aren't close anymore. I mean, he confirmed the rift. And this is a rift, by the way, that a lot of the media reported between the two brothers that everyone vehemently denied even was happening. And then Harry said, it is happening, you know, in so many words. You know, he's talked about different paths and things like that, but it's clear they're nowhere near as fabulously close as they used to be. And part of the rift apparently is because when Meghan first came to Britain, Harry wanted to get engaged right away, and William was trying to say, why don't you hold off a bit? Why don't you, you know, live together, see how it goes? And that's part of the tension. And apparently William was really hurt. Like, he had no advance warning that this was happening. He saw it when everyone else did. And that's been a tension. And so then they kind of, you know, there has been a reaction to that. And then Harry and Meghan's people have reacted to, you know, what William's people have done. And so it's created even more rifts between the brothers, which I think is incredibly sad, because those guys are close. And I'm hoping that they can patch it up. And I'm wondering if we're going to look back at this documentary in hindsight, in 5 years, in 10 years, and see it as some sort of turning point in the royal family.
Thank you, Patricia.
You're welcome.
Patricia Treble of WriteRoyalty.com and Maclean's. That was The Big Story. If you'd like more, we've even covered the royals before. You can head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can also talk to us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. And of course, everywhere you get podcasts, especially in Apple, where we gladly accept 5-star ratings, you can find us and listen to us and subscribe for free. Claire Brassard is the lead producer of The Big Story. Ryan Clark and Stephanie Phillips are our associate producers. Annalisa Nielsen is our digital editor. And I am Jordan Heath Rawlings. Thanks for listening. Have a nice weekend. We'll talk Monday.